Okay. I was born in Fort Meade, Florida, which is a little town up in near Winter Haven, Central Florida. And we moved back to the reservation when I was very young and went to school on the reservation for a couple of years. And then we moved around the state a lot. My dad worked for the government, so we moved an awful lot. And in the late 40s, early 50s, I moved to West Palm Beach area and been there ever since. Went to school at Lake Worth High, graduated there, went in the Air Force. And after the service, I came back here and got married, lived here now. You're not married, are you? Okay. We enjoy the area. How many of you know much about what the Indians, or anything about Indians in school? Have you studied them at all, or do you know? Do you know why they're called Indians? No? Why are they called Indians?
Well, they're different from us.
Well, that's partially right. Yeah? Right. See, Columbus wasn't looking for America. He wasn't looking for the New World. If you know much about geography and world and how the world's set up, where Spain and Italy and all them countries are over, you know, in Europe, well, they had to go all the way down around Africa and back up and over to India to do their trading. Well, you know, people used to think the world was flat. They believed if you sail off the horizon, you'd fall off. Remember that in school? It was all flat. The earth wasn't round. Well, some people got the idea that the earth was round because when they saw ships go out to the horizon, you'd see the ship slowly disappear. You only see just the mast sticking up. Have you ever been over to the beach and seen just a ship? Sometimes you see just the top of a ship. You can't see the whole thing. Just a mast or the sail or something sticking up over the horizon. You can't see the body of the ship, because it's over the curvature of the earth. Well, people got the idea maybe the earth is round. So Columbus is one of those people that believed the earth was round. And if the earth was round, then if you started here and sail around the earth, you come back to where you started from. So he figured, well, now if the earth is round, I can start here and I can sail over the ocean and get to India, and maybe as a shortcut, I won't have to go around Africa. And that's why he sailed out. And of course, when he suddenly found land, he saw these people which looked like Indians from India, very primitive people. They called them Indians. Well, it wasn't until a long time after that America was discovered that they realized that the Indians aren't just Indians, that they're different people. The Cherokees are different from the Creeks are different from the Sioux, and the Sioux are different from the Cheyenne are different from the Arapaho. They're all different peoples. Just like you got different people in the room here. You got different nationalities. Some of you are from Italian descent, all different nationalities and races here, and you're not the same. Everybody in this room's not the same. Your background's different. Some are Spanish. So the Indians are the same way. When he got here, they found out these people were all different, and they can't talk to each other. The Cherokees can't talk to the Seminoles. The Seminoles can't talk to the Sioux. And when you look at movies, you watch TV and stuff, what you always see is Western Indians with the big feather war bonnets and stuff. Well, all Indians didn't wear that type of thing. Are you interested in how they lived? What they used to do? Well, see, originally, before the white man came, before he discovered America, there was no hardware stores, there was no supermarkets, there was no sporting goods stores. So everything he had to do, he had to make himself. He had to create of what he had. This is what he made his clothes out of. You can pass that around. That's leather. That's a piece of deer hide. And he would have to kill a deer, skin it out, and he made his shirts and his clothes out of that, like your mother, or if your mother sews, or the manufacturers now, you go to the store and buy your clothes, but somebody had to cut them out and sew them together. Well, that's what they did. They would sew their clothes out of this leather and make up their garments. They also made their homes out of that. They would make their, out west, they had teepees. Some Indians had hogans. Now the Seminoles lived in what we call chakis. And a chaki is a little thatched roof with four poles on it. And we have one chaki for each room you have in your house. We have a cooking and eating chaki, which is like your kitchen and dining room. We have a sleeping chaki, which is like your bedroom. We have a living chaki, like your living room, where we lounge around in. So we have one chaki for each room like you have in your house.
How do you spell that?
Chaki is C-H-I-C-K-E-E. And it's just a thatch. You see them a lot of times. Some parks are going to have them now. They'll be in a lot of the parks. It's just a palm frond cover on top with four poles and a framework underneath. The beaches, a lot of the beaches here have hired some of the Seminoles to come up and build them at the beach. Lake Worth Beach has a bunch of them, only they're round. They built round ones. They're building them in all different shapes now, but originally they were just square, and that's what they lived under. And in the wintertime, when it got real cold, they would make a thatchwork mat for a wall and hang it up on the sides to keep the wind from blowing through. So they were very comfortable, and they build them in groups called camps. You might call yours a neighborhood or a subdevelopment or something. We call them camps. And all the families together would build their chickees in a group. And sometimes they have many chickees. One family might have several different chickees built over different areas, and they would travel around. They might stay in one chickee one place for a few months and then go to the next chickee and stay there for a few months and just kind of follow around a different pattern. Like some people have a summer home. Some people have a cabin. Anybody here have cabins up in the mountains? Some families have cabins in the mountains. Well, it's the same idea. We would have chickees someplace else where they would go to hunt and fish someplace else. So it's like a different place, a vacation for them. The Seminoles are a matriarch class society, which means that when you get married, now when you get married now, when you young ladies get married next week or whatever, you'll take on your husband's name. Well, in the Seminoles, you take on the wife's name. The man takes the wife's name, and the man goes and lives with the wife's clan and becomes part of her clan. So that's how that's what they mean by matriarch society. They have four reservations in Florida right now, main reservations. There's the Big Cypress Reservation, which is on the south end of Lake Okeechobee, where we hunt and fish and get away from everything. There's a Brighton Reservation, which is on north end Lake Okeechobee, which is where they do their cattle and farming industry. The Hollywood Reservation down in Hollywood, Florida, is the headquarters of the tribe. It's where the tribal offices are and the government offices, and all the main business of the tribe is taken care of there. And then Tamiami Trail is a reservation. And a lot of people live out along the Tamiami Trail. Anybody ever been out on Tamiami Trail? You travel way out there, you see some chickees and a lot of people living out there. Some people have they offer airboat rides and fishing trips and stuff. It's how they make their living. Tourists go out and they take them out in airboat rides and they guide people out hunting and fishing and they have arts and crafts out there. So that's how they live today. Now the Seminoles today have strange names like mine and some other names. And the way they got names is there's a lot of Seminoles named Bowers and Jones and Johnson and how they got their names was originally there was a lot of prejudice against Indians. So when an Indian would leave the reservations to go work for a farmer or something, to save people pestering him and being prejudiced against him, he would take the farmer's name. Maybe the farmer's name was Jones, so he would take the name of Jones. And that's how they come up with these strange names now. They would adopt their rancher or whoever was taking care of them, they would adopt their name. And so now you see Seminoles with a lot of different strange names. Now many years ago, long, long, long time ago, what we do, when a young man reached about you guys' age, he would go off in the Everglades by himself, and he would take only his gun and his knife, and he had to live by himself for 2 weeks in the Everglades, get his food, and make a shelter, and pray to the Great Spirit, and meditate about his life, what he wanted to do with his life, what he wanted to become, and what he... Pardon? The Great Spirit is God. Everybody has a different name for God. We call him the Great Spirit. And all Indians believe in one God, by the way. They had one main God. And he had many names, Wonkantonkan or Great Spirit. A lot of Indian names for him. A lot of tribes called God He of Many Names. Because they realized that every tribe had different names for the same God, so they would call him He of Many Names. For that reason. And when a white man came, he had his name for God. But it's basically, they believe that the same God created the earth and created all of us on it. And that's the one God they believe in. Now they believe that the young man, like you, about your age, a little older maybe, would go in the Everglades and pray to the Great Spirit about his life and what he wanted to be. then he would come back, and when he was born, he was given a name for life. I mean, he was given a name when he was born. When he goes out in the Everglades, and he would pray to the Great Spirit and come back, he would talk to the medicine man and the elders. At that time, he went through a naming ceremony, and he was given a name for life then by what he believed in and his beliefs, so that he would choose his own name then for the rest of his life. So they all have, that's how they got there. Not anymore. Now they have names like you get your names, and when they're given by birth, they're given a name, and they keep it. But that was the old way. Now, young ladies about your age, a little older maybe, went through a ceremony, and they got a strand of beads when they went through the ceremony. And every year they add beads for different things in their life. How many of you have been out to the fair, South Florida Fair? Do you remember, ever remember seeing a little lady who looks like this in one of the buildings? Sits up front? Well, that's my grandmother. And she wears her hair in a traditional way like this. And if you notice, she has a lot of beads around her neck. Now, some ladies, some elderly ladies might wear 15, 20 pounds of beads when they reach old age. They wear tremendous piles of beads. Now, y'all have necklaces. Some have necklaces in the room. Now, none of their necklaces, none of their beads have any clips on them and no clasps. Each one of those strands are hand-tied every morning, individually tied on. Every night, they're cut loose and laid out. And every morning they're tied back on again. And it's considered a very grave insult to be seen without their beads. Now, my grandmother used to stay with us during the fair a lot. And it was a long time, it was several years staying with us before she allowed my wife to see her without the beads on. She would stay in the bedroom, put all her beads on before she'd come out of the bedroom. Because she thought it was an insult for somebody to see her. Until she got to know my wife. And then after she got to know her, she'd come out without her beads on. But they're very, it's a very honorable thing to be sure and wear your beads. But next time, next year at the fair, if you go out and look for her, she sits up in one of the buildings. Now, the dress they have is very colorful. We don't know where that, for sure, that came from. But that piece of leather you're passing around, that was what they used to make their clothes out of. But now, back in the late 1800s, of course, they traded the white man for clothes and started wearing the cloth clothes. And as the clothes wore out, they begin to patch them, probably. This is what the theory is. They begin to patch their clothes. And they think at some time somebody probably saw a patchwork quilt. Y'all seen patchwork quilts all pieced together? And they tried to copy those with their clothes. And that's where they came up with these designs. And it's hundreds of pieces of cloth all sewn together and to make these real pretty patterns. And the men wear shirts similar to this, long sleeve and short sleeve shirts. And the ladies wear clothes similar to this. It's a nice skirt with a blouse on it, and they're beads. You know, now, as I was saying, we didn't have all these good things they have today, like hardware stores and different things that they have. They had to go out, and they had to get rocks like this. This is a piece of flint. I'm sure your teachers can tell you all about flint. This comes usually in the mountain areas. There are flint deposits in North Florida. But it's a type of stone, and they take and they begin chipping this away. Now, that's a very difficult thing to do because, as your teachers know, all rocks have flaws in them. And when you start making something, you want to make sure you know where the flaw is because there's nothing would be more discouraging than to sit there for a couple hours chipping this away, making something, and have it break in half on you. So they had to know where all the flaws are. They had to know where everything is in that rock. And they chip it away, and it makes something like this. This is an arrow point. This is how they made arrows hundreds of years ago. This is the original way of making arrows. It has a flint point on it. It has the arrow, the eagle feathers tied on the end. You can see it's not very straight. It's kind of crooked. This is river cane. This comes from Georgia, North Florida, and up in the Carolina area. And it looks like a bamboo. It's in the same family of bamboo, I guess. And you can see it's not very straight. So you know it's not going to be very accurate. So the Indian had become very good at stalking his game, or he didn't eat. And that's when he became very good at sneaking up on things. He had to get very close to kill a deer or something, or his family didn't get to eat anything.
Question over here, Mr.
Hancock. Sure.
Have you ever used that?
No, I haven't. It's just an old man made it for me, and I just like to keep it for, just for to show people like you. If I use it, I'm afraid it'd get broke, and then you wouldn't have a chance to see it. I want to be sure everybody gets to see it. Yes. No, I've watched the old man make this. He's a real old man in Cherokee, North Carolina. He made it for me. and I watched him make it. I guess it wouldn't be hard to, after seeing him make one. I can't make the points. I watched him and he tried to teach me. I just can't learn to make points, and that's a very difficult job. It takes a long time to learn it. Yes.
Do you hunt a lot?
I used to hunt a lot. Mm-hmm. I don't do much anymore. I don't have the time really to hunt, but I used to hunt a lot. Yes.
Do you kill animals with that?
No, I just keep this just to show, so that young people can see what this looks like and see how they were made. I don't use it. I just keep it because otherwise people wouldn't get to see how they're made. If I used it and broke it, then I wouldn't have it anymore. And I think it's more important for y'all to see what they used to look like, you know. And
after the supermarkets came, did they keep hunting or did they start going to the supermarkets?
Yes, they do both. A lot of them still hunt today. And they hunt on Big Cypress Reservation. They still do a lot of hunting. And they still do some, a lot of them do shop at supermarkets. And they do a lot of farming. They grow a lot of their own vegetables. And they do a lot of fishing for their fish. Yes?
Have you tried making an arrow?
No, I haven't tried to make one. But I might try one someday just to see if I can. Yes? Uh-huh. Was he kind of an old man? Yeah, it was Stanley. He's an old medicine man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's from Oklahoma. He's a Seminole from Oklahoma. And he's very, very old, and he came in to visit us at the fair.
Have you ever gardened?
Have you ever gardened? I worked on a cattle ranch for years, and I've helped farm. My uncle owned a big cattle ranch for a long, long time. I used to work with him all the time. Yes?
Is that also like cloth they kill the deer with?
This is the same thing that you're passing around, more or less. This is leather. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Does your wife make those?
No, she doesn't.
We saw on the slide, Jay presentation yesterday of Mary Dillon making palmetto.
Uh-huh. Yeah, these dolls are made from this is a palmetto cabbage palm. And there's a red, if you look at the cabbage palm close to the trunk, you see these, it's like a woven cloth, it looks like. All cabbage palms have this, and they strip this off, and that's what they make the body of the dolls out of. And the head's made out of a little ball of that cabbage palm sheet. They also eat the cabbage palm. It's called swamp cabbage. And the very heart of it is very good to eat. It's one of the staple foods of the Seminoles. Yes? They do. They do still do a lot of dances. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They do. Most dancing was done. See, the Indians had no written language. They had no way of recording things, so dancing was their library, and they would act out legends and stories in the dance. And at night, you sit around the campfire, and they would dance, and you could tell by how they were dancing what the story was, and that's how they told the stories from generation to generation through dancing. Also, if you went out hunting sometime in years, before America was discovered, if you went out hunting sometime and you'd come back at night and it was a very successful hunt, you and your buddies would dance out to hunt. One of you would play the deer or the buffalo or whatever, and the others would play the hunters, and you'd act out how you got the deer in the dance and tell stories that way. Yes?
I was looking at my Florida history book.
Mm-hmm.
The spindle picture, I saw it look like an elephant. And it looked like they were, like, taking off the skin and all that.
Well, I guess your teachers know more about that than I do, but I guess a long, long time ago, thousands of years ago, there were, like, mastodons in Florida, which was like an elephant. And he had great big, huge, curved tusks. And they lived here. In fact, they have the skeleton of one in the Science Museum at West Palm Beach. They have the skeleton of a mastodon found out west of town. And they were like elephants. They were great, big, huge creatures. Your teachers can really tell you more about that than I can. And the Indians, the first Indians, used to hunt those things and kill them and skin them for meat. Yes?
Mary Billy?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What's she like?
Very nice. She's most of the old Seminoles won't talk to you when they meet you because they don't know people. They're very shy and they're very quiet and they won't really talk to people. But once you get to know them, they're like everybody else. They have a good sense of humor. They like to joke around a lot, and they really, it's fun to get them telling stories and talking about some of the old times. And they're very sociable people. Once you become good friends with them, and they like to have fun, enjoy life like everybody else, and they don't like people like you wouldn't either, riding through your neighborhood taking pictures all the time. You know, sometimes people treat them like tourists, so they kind of stay in the background. And a lot of them you don't get to see because they do stay hidden away where people can't see them. Yes?
So, last year, there was a network getting around by a wolfbang. It was the first one to attack. Well, there was this play with some people, with some kids that were older from our trip, and they were all just as Indians. They were doing dances, and they were included at a story. And I forget what the names of it. It was these two guys, and the small one was bigger.
Yeah.
Can you tell us some stories about the old town?
Yeah, I sure will. Seminole, by the way, means run away or move away, basically. A lot of things don't translate very good from English to Indian, because Indians didn't have a lot of words for a lot of different things, but it basically means break away or run away. And what the Seminoles at one time were part of the Creek tribe, which is up in the Carolinas and Georgia and Alabama area. And when the farming and the big plantation and the farms and towns begin to grow up around Georgia and Alabama, a lot of pressure is put on the Indians. And their hunting lands were depleted. They were put on reservations, and there was a lot of pressures put on them. So a group of them broke away and moved into North Florida. And that's where the Seminoles came from originally. And they moved into North Florida. And then over the years, after the Seminole Indian Wars, they were pushed down further into Florida. Part of them were taken and moved to Oklahoma, and the rest of them are in the Everglades where they live today. So there's two parts of the Seminole tribe. One part's in Oklahoma, and the other part's here in South Florida. Yes? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I participate in a lot of dancing. They have a lot of championships now, a lot of competition dancing, where they get together, and all of the United States, and they have prize money and prizes and trophies awarded for the best dancers. And there's a very good friend of mine over in the West Coast, and his son is a Grand National Champion. He's about your age, and he's Grand National Champion. And he won the United States Championship a couple years ago. So it's becoming a very big on dancing, and it's making a big comeback. Most of the costumes you see on dancing, Indian dancing, are usually the Western costumes with the big feathers and all of them. Now, the Eastern tribes didn't have the elaborate costumes, and that's what people want to see. They want to see the big feather costumes. So most of the dancing now is done with the big feather costumes because they are so pretty, and they look gorgeous with the big bustles and the big headdresses and all the beautiful beadwork. Yes?
Do you have
any feather
costumes?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those hoops are, they're hoop dancing. It's a very pretty dance to watch him try to, it's like, y'all seen the hula hoops?
Mm-hmm.
They're very similar to that. And some of the dancers can dance with 12, 15 of those things at one time. And they throw them on the ground in a pattern, and they start dancing, they pick them up with their feet and flick them up, and they keep going, and they finally get all 12, 15 hoops going at one time. And they're going through all of them, and it's really beautiful to watch. It's very difficult to do. You can get tangled up real easy if you're not careful. Yes?
I saw an Indian 1650 choir.
Mm-hmm.
That burned on
his foot. Yeah, I used to do, there was three of us, when I was young, there was three of us used to do the fire hoop dance together. And it was quite a thing to see three hoops on fire at the same time going. It's a difficult dance to do. You can get burned very easy. If you make the wrong move at the wrong time, you have a little burn mark someplace on your body. Yes? Yes, I did, quite a few times. You always kept some burn medicine, unguentine or something, in your dance bag because the hoop is very small. It's only about so big around, and it's on fire. And when you're dancing through it, if you stand up a little bit too quick, it catches catches across the back or it catches across the back of the legs or something, I guarantee you don't leave it there very long when it touches you because it's hot. But it does leave a little bit of a burn mark on you. And it started raining? Somebody pushed the wrong button, didn't they? Is there such a place as Colorado? Nah. It's pretty out there, isn't it? Yeah, it's a gorgeous area.
When I went to the fair, I saw these Indian men. They lit a torch and they put it in their mouth.
I know.
And they got a sword also and put it down their throat.
Yeah, well, that's...
How did they do that?
I don't know. That's not the American Indian way. Some people do it, but that's just a thing they do. I don't know how they do that. But that's, Indians didn't have anything like that. They did it themselves. That's just something they've learned on their own.
My mom's friend was a sword swallower, and they put it through the breathing hole.
They do. Not me.
Me either. And how did you learn how to do the dances?
We were taught by other people who know how to do them. We would teach each other. And then later on, I would teach other young men how to do them. So it was kind of passed down from one generation to the next. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Do you have an Indian chief?
Pardon? Indian chief? Yes, we do. His name is James Billy. And he's a Seminole chief right now. The chief is elected for a 4-year term. He's like the President of the United States. And we have a tribal council that's elected by the people. And the council is elected from each reservation, just like your Congress is. And they all meet, and they govern the tribe. They make laws, and they pass regulations. And they're elected just like the Congress are elected. And then the chief is elected for a 4-year term, and he's like the president. And this is like a government like we have. They run their own government, and they have their own police force. They have their own health care. So they're more like a city unto themselves. Yes. A nickname? Well, I was called Cheyenne when I was a kid. My Indian name is Okchokti, which means big otter. Pardon? When? Long time ago, 1939. Anybody else born here in 1939? You? Okay. There's, Well, I like water sports. I like diving and stuff, and I always like the water, canoeing and things. And usually when you're given a name, kind of what befits your lifestyle. My wife was just adopted into the bird clan in a ceremony, and they said she was small and cute like a budgie, which is a similar name for a bird. So her name is Budgie, which is like a little tiny, real pretty little bird that lives in the Everglades. So you're given a name by, they kind of look at you and talk to you and figure out what you like and what you do and try to pick a name that befits that. Yes?
How long do Indians usually live?
Well, it used to be they didn't live very long years ago. If you were 25, 30 years old, you were old. But now my grandmother's she's almost 90, around 90. They don't know for sure because, see, records were never kept on Indians. And, there was no birth certificates, no nothing on them. So, but they traced back as best they could, and they think she's around 90 years old. Her sister's around 112. So they lived to be quite old. There's several men on the reservation who are in their 90s and close to 100. So they get to be lived quite a long time now. Yes?
Is your wife Indian?
No, she's not. She's in Tennessee. But she was adopted into the bird clan of the Seminole tribe. Yes. Pardon? Her real name? LaDonna. But her similar name is Budgie. When they died? Well, a lot of different tribes did different things. The Seminoles, they built a wooden coffin, and it was put up on blocks in the Everglades, and your most personal possessions were taken. And they were, if you had a favorite pot and a dish and a cup and a spoon and fork you ate with, That's taken and broken. And they believe that releases a spirit. So when you go to heaven, you have something to eat with, that the spirit of the pot goes to heaven with you. And your favorite gun was taken and it was bent or broken and put in there with you. And that way, when you get to heaven, you have something to hunt with. You had your gun with you. And then you just buried, you left in the Everglades like that. It's like above ground burying in a coffin. Now, we believe when you die that the owl takes your soul to heaven. That's the owl's job. He's a very sacred bird. You have a question? It's not longer of any use. So the spirit is released of the gun. So the spirit goes to heaven with your spirit. So when you get there, you have something to hunt with. And in the spirit, the dish, it goes to heaven, so you have something to eat out of when you get there. See, the Seminole, the Indians believe that everything has a spirit. The trees, the rocks, the rivers, the mountains, everything has a spirit. And that's just one of their beliefs, that if the good Lord made us with a spirit, then he must give a spirit to everything else. And our plates, you have a spirit. So everything is broken when you die, so that it goes with you to heaven. So you still have, when you get to heaven, you still have your prized possessions are still with you when you get there. You have a question? Pardon?
How old are you?
How old am I? I'm 48. Ancient, right?
Do you have a boat?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I enjoy, my wife and I do a lot of target shooting with bow and arrows. It's a lot of fun. Do you have one?
I want one.
You don't want one? You want one? Well, it's something that's fun. You have to be very careful with. They're very dangerous. They can do a lot of damage to somebody, which is not right. But so if you get one, you have to be very careful and make sure you know where you're shooting. But they're a lot of fun. It's a good sport. Yes, ma'am.
How receptive are the children of the Seminole Indians that are left to learn your customs so that they can carry it on in the future?
Well, for a long time, there was so much prejudice against Indians that the culture, a lot of it has died out. And in fact, some tribes, my sister-in-law is Indian from the Northwest, and there was two tribes, the Sac and the Fox Indians, and they merged to the Sac and Fox tribe, and their language is lost. And they have recently, fortunately, found about three people who still knew the language, and they recorded the language, and they're trying to teach it. They're teaching it in the schools, trying to bring it back. And there are tribes that have lost their language. The Cherokees are trying to teach theirs and bring theirs back. And a lot of the heritage was lost because of the prejudice. This kind of sewing was almost a dying art, because a shirt like this takes almost a week to make this. And people didn't want to pay more than like $15, $20 for one of them. And that's a lot of work for a whole week to make. So people quit making them. They just didn't want to bother with it. Now they're getting a good price for them, so we hope it'll make a comeback. And there's a resurgence now of people trying to learn the culture, and we're glad of that. Young people are trying to learn their heritage, scrambling now, trying to get back and learn it in schools. So we're happy about that. Yes?
Is your boat like a canoe or a motorboat?
I have both. I have a canoe and I have a little motorboat, both. Yes?
How many kids do you have?
I got two boys. One of them is 23, and one of them is 21. My oldest boy's name is Tad, and my youngest boy's name is Chain. It's spelled C-H-E-Y-N-N-E. It's almost like Cheyenne. There's one E missing. C-H-E-Y-N-N-E. You have a question? No? No? You do. They don't have similar names. Someday I'll bring the medicine man up, and we'll go through a naming ceremony, but they've never gone through one yet. Those dolls, that probably takes 3 or 4 hours anyway to make one of those, to sew it together and make the body. And yes, sir.
How old is that chief?
Which one, James Billy, the chief? He's about 35. He's a young man, and he's really a go-getter. He's very nice. He's a lot of fun.
Is he any relation to Mary Billy? Is Susie Billy?
They're all in the same family. Yeah. He was also kin to Josie Billy, who just died, a famous medicine man. Yes.
Did you ever have any pets?
Oh, yeah. I've got a great big Siberian husky right now. He's from Alaska. He's an Eskimo dog. I got him from an Eskimo. And his name is Nokanai. And we call him Kanai for short. And but he's very, he's black and white. Looks like a raccoon. He's got a big black mask across his eyes. Yes. Friends of other tribes? Oh, yeah. I got some very good friends in Cherokee, North Carolina. We visit every time we go up there. We stay in a reservation with them. We have some good friends in Oklahoma and out west and Colorado and areas. Yeah, we just sure do. Yes? Me?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. Well, that's a good question. He campaigned for it. They file with the tribal council like we have to do here with the city council, and they say they want to run for chief, and then he campaigned. They go around giving speeches, and they have rallies, and they get people together, and they try to get people to vote for him, and they tell what they're going to do for the tribe if they're elected, and then the people decide who they want, and they have the election, just a regular election like we have today. Yes. Yes, he's in the same family, same clan, yeah.
What's the name of your tribe?
The tribe is Seminole, but my clan is Otter Clan. I belong to the Otter Clan.
Have you ever
run for chief? No. No, it's a very time-consuming job, and you have to be really dedicated to do that. It takes a lot of time, and it takes a lot of... they travel all the United States. They're always gone traveling. He gives a lot of speeches. He has to go to Congress all the time. He's always up in Washington. So it's a very, very time-consuming job, and I'm glad that somebody wants to do it because it's a very worthwhile job. Yes?
Well, when that chief finds that you have now, does he pick anybody to be another chief before he dies?
No, they'll have another election. He's only elected for 4 years. After 4 years, they elect a new chief. Every 4 years, we have an election. So every 4 years, he'll... And if he dies, then they have a new election, and they elect somebody new. Just like we do in the United States with a president. Yes?
How long have you lived in Florida?
All my life. I was born here, and I like Florida. Do you like Florida?
Yeah.
Do you like Florida?
Yeah.
She's not saying.
I noticed you brought a lot of other things with you. I was wondering if you maybe have a minute to show me.
This is a blowgun. This is made from the same river cane this is. The same, only it's bigger. And they straighten it out. You can see heat marks on here where they've heated it up to straighten it. And it has things inside like bamboo has. Each one of these is solid, and they break them through so you can see all the way through it. Make a hollow tube out of it. And let's see. These are the darts they use in it. These are made from a willows up in, they find up in North Florida and Carolinas and places. And they tie them onto these little sticks. And they put them in here and just blow it. And they shoot them out of here. This is a short one. This is one used for, this one's used for small things like birds and rabbits. I have a 6-foot one at home that's used for bigger things like small deer and, you know, small mammals. This is a game that they play. Have you ever heard of lacrosse?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an Indian game. Colleges started to play lacrosse again. It's becoming very big again now, and it's making a big comeback. But this is Indian stickball. And you have two of these sticks, one each hand. And the rules are very simple. You can't touch the ball with your hands. And the ball is about the size, a little smaller than a tennis ball. And it's made of leather, wrapped real tight, layer upon layer upon layer, and to make a real hard ball like this. And you'd have 12 men on a team, and you line up and face each other. And the guy you're facing is your opposite. There's no timeout, no substitutions. Once the game starts, you keep going until somebody makes 12 points. And sometimes games will last 30, 40, and 50 hours straight, day and night. They never stop. And if the guy that you lined up opposite leads the game, you have to leave the game. You can't come back, he comes back. So there's always an even number of people inside. You can't keep going day and night if somebody makes 12 points. It's a fun game. They still play it. It was real big today on reservations. Cherokee every year has a championship. They come from all the United States to play for the championship of the stickball games.
Who was the chief before the one right now?
The one right now? It was Howard Tommy.
On the game that you play, how do you score?
they have a goal. It's a good question. They have two goal posts, like in football, and you have to get the ball down, throw it through the goal post, and each side picks a goal, and they just run down the field carrying the ball, trying to throw it through the goal post until somebody gets through 12 times. And every time they have a scorekeeper, and every time your team gets a score, they stick a stick in the ground, and same with the other team, and when somebody gets 12 sticks, the game's over. Yes?
What do those sticks like do? Do they have like a poisonous thing in them?
They did. There was a poison they could use. There's a tree here in Everglades that's very poison. And also the lantana plant. Your teachers can probably tell you there's some deadly poison plants in Florida. Lantana is a very poison plant. And they could grind these up. And there's a little plant in Florida called a rosary pea, which is very poison. And they can grind those up and make a paste, and they would smear on the end of these things. But usually they didn't use poison darts too much unless it was a very, very big animal. Because the small ones, they could kill pretty good with these things. Yes? Yes. Yeah, they wore necklaces and chokers and different type of beads. Yeah. Not like the women wore, but they would wear a few strands. Yes, I have. I used to do wrestling shows. And I had a 6-footer I carried around to do shows, and he got so big and he got so smart he untied himself all the time. I couldn't keep him tied up. And I kept him in the back of my pickup truck when we went to do shows, and finally had to carry him in the cab of the truck, and my wife had to scratch him behind the head to keep him quiet. Like a dog, he right to sleep. She stopped petting him. He starts flopping around the cabin of the truck. And he got so big I had to carry his tail out the window. And I got stopped by a police officer. I checked my permit. I was doing an alligator hanging out the cab of the truck. Pardon? Well, I was always scared. I respect him very much. I mean, I won't say I'm scared. I respect him. They're a lot of power, and they can... A friend of mine just had his thumb bitten off completely down at Hollywood wrestling one, and he's been doing it for 20 years, and it took his thumb right off. So they can be a formidable animal. It pays to respect them and be afraid of them. Yes? I think he's about another year and a half to have an election. I think he's about two and a half years into his term or something like that now. Oh, yeah, we had a lady chief. Sure did. And a lady can run for chief. They quite often do. And Betty Mae Jumper was a chief that we had. She was the first woman lady chief we had. She did an excellent job. She made a lot of history-making decisions, and she was very good.
Does your pet ever do something like chase after your alligator or something when you have an alligator?
He did once. That was the last time he did. He found out what the alligator can do.
Do you like to travel?
Yes. Yeah, we do a lot of traveling. It's fun. Do you like to travel?
Yes.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Meet all kinds of people and see new things.
Did some ladies fight the alligator?
I imagine they could. I don't know if any of them do, but there's no reason why if they wanted to, they could. Just nobody's ever wanted to. I'm sure they'd be welcome to it. A lot of the girls... don't particularly want to do things like that. They're, you know, they say, yuck. You know, slimy alligators. Yes?
Or your kids have Indians?
Yeah, they're parked. I don't, you know, about a little less than half, probably.
Is your wife no Indian?
No, she's not Indian at all. She's from Tennessee.
Do you know some legends?
Yes, ma'am. You know, it used to be... When I was real young, we weren't long, long ago, before America was discovered, of course, we didn't know that the Indians didn't know the stars were actually universes light years away. Your teacher can tell you all about what they are. There's suns out there millions and millions of light years away from us. But of course, we didn't know that. Even the Europeans didn't know what they were. And when I was young, The old men used to do things with us, take us fishing and hunting and camping and things and teach us stuff. And we'd be around a campfire at night, and they would ask questions. We'd ask them about why are the stars there and why do we have the sun? Where did the sun come from? And some of the things the old man told us was that a long time ago, there was no sun on this side of the earth. When the Great Spirit first made the earth, he made only animals. There was no man yet. And we had no sun here. So the animals got together, and they decided to go to the other side of the earth and ask for a piece of the sun on the other side of the earth. So they went to the other side of the earth, and they asked for a piece of the sun. And the animals over there said, no, it's our sun. You can't have any. So they came back over here, and he said, well, let's get together, and we'll steal a piece of sun. So the great buzzard took off, and he says, I'll go over here. I'll fly high above the sun. I'll swoop down, tear off a hunk of the sun, and I'll put in my big, beautiful feather top knot, and I'll fly back and put it in our sky. So off he flew, and he got the other side of the earth. He swooped down. He tore off a hunk of the sun, and he stuck in his big, beautiful feather top knot, and back he came. Well, the sun was so hot, it burned all the feathers off his head. If you see a buzzard today, he still has a large, ugly red head with no feathers on it. So then he said, what are we going to do now? So the possum said, well, I'll go get a piece of the sun. He said, they won't be watching for me. They'll watch for birds. I'll climb a tree. I'll tear off a piece of sun. I'll stick it in my big furry tail. I'll bring it back and put it in the sky over here. So off the possum went. He climbed a very tall tree. He grabbed a piece of the sun, stuck it in his furry tail, and back he came. Well, it was so hot it burned all the fur off his tail. If you see a possum today, he has a long hairless tail, no fur on his own, because it burned all the fur off. So he said, what are we going to do now? So Grandmother Spider said, I'll go get a piece of the sun. They won't watch for a tiny thing like me. So I'll sneak through the grass. I'll climb up a tall tree. I'll tear off a piece of the sun. I'll spin it in my web and bring it back and put it in the sky over here. So off she went. She went to the other side of the earth. She climbed a very tall tree. She tore off a piece of the sun, spun it in her web, and she brought it back and put it in our sky. And now we have the sun over here. And in honor of Grandmother Spider doing that, if you ever see a spider web now, it looks just like the rising sun. There's a little round circle in the middle for the rising sun, and the morning rays go out in all different directions like the rising sun does when it comes over the ocean, because she brought the sun this side of the earth. One night, the old man said that we asked him how they came to be. He said, well, a long, long time ago, before man came, only animals were here. The animals got together one night and went to the Great Spirit. And he said, Great Spirit, it's so dark at night and so ugly. Is there anything you can do to brighten the sky up, to make it pretty? Not to keep us awake, but just some kind of a light to make it pretty for us. So the Great Spirit said, yes. He said, each of you go to the river and collect the shiny stones and climb in the sky and make your picture. Well, the big bear took off and he went to the river and got a bunch of handful of stones and climbed in the sky. He made his picture in the north sky, and today we call his picture the Big Dipper, the Big Bear, Ursa Major. And the little bear took off and made his picture in the sky. And he made his picture the little bear, the Little Dipper, then the ram and the fish. And they began to make their pictures across the sky. Well, the tiny animals came to the Great Spirit. And you all know the zodiac, don't you? Signs of zodiac. They're all animal pictures. And that's how they got to be there, because the animals made these pictures up there. Well, then the little animals came to the Great Spirit. And he said, Great Spirit, the stones are so big that we're so small, we can only carry one at a time. We have to go all the way to the river, pick up one stone, climb in the sky, put it there, and climb all the way back down, pick up one stone. We're going to die of old age before we can have stones to make our picture up there. Can somebody help us carry the stones in the sky? So the Great Spirit looked around, and there was a coyote out playing in the woods. So he called the coyote over, and he said, you are to go to the river and collect all the stones that are left, put them on a blanket, and take them in the sky, put them in one big pile in the sky, so the tiny animals can go through the pile and get a stone and make their pictures. Well, the coyote got mad. I'm sure you get mad sometimes. Your parents might tell you do something you don't want to do. And he got mad, and he went to the river, and he got all the stones in a blanket, and he started fussing to himself, and he said, I have to do all the dirty work for these little guys. He said, the big guys are out playing, the bear, and everybody's out playing, having a good time, and I'm doing the dirty work. So he got all the stones on the blanket, and he started dragging the blanket in the sky. Well, the higher in the sky he got, the heavier it got. And the heavier it got, the madder he got. And he finally got so mad, he grabbed the blanket and he slung it. And all the stones spattered across the sky. And all of a sudden he thought about something. He hadn't made his picture yet. He looked back at the blanket and all the stones are gone. He looked down at the river and all the stones are gone. And there was no stones left to make his picture. So to this day, the coyote howls at the sky every night because his picture's not in the sky at night. There was a village out not far from here, out in the Everglades, and every night these big creatures come out of the sky, and they would swoop down and grab people out of the village and eat them, kill them and eat them, take them off in the Everglades. Well, the Indians tried for many years to kill these things, but the arrows bounced off their skin. It was so thick and so heavy that nothing would penetrate it. It just bounced off. And one night, one of the young men noticed that when these monsters came out of the sky, they always kept their head tucked down over their chest. And one night, one of them swooped by real close and saw a big white spot in the air. And he said, "I bet that's a soft spot. If you think an animal's turn their head, you can shoot that soft spot." So he had all monsters swooped out of the sky to grab these people. They would jump up, beat on their pots and pans, and make noise. And these creatures would turn their head to see what the noise was. And when they turned their head, the young men would jump up and shoot an arrow at a soft spot to kill these monsters. The next night, here come these things out of the sky, screeching and howling, and dove down towards the people. And just before they got to the people, all the ladies jumped up, and the young kids started beating on their pots and pans and rattles and screaming, making all this noise. And just like they hoped they would, these creatures turned their heads to see what this noise was. And when they did, the young men jumped up and shot the arrows into their throats and killed them. And all these creatures dropped dead to the earth. And all the blood began to run out of these wounds, all of the Everglades. And all of South Florida was covered in blood. Fishermen do the same thing today. You know, they caught a fish this big, or it was only this big. That was just a story. They just climbed up in there. Made a pretty story, though, didn't it? Any more questions? Yes. These darts, they straighten these out too.
Why didn't they straighten up the arrows?
They did as best they could, but that's about as good as you can straighten that thing. It's kind of difficult to get it much straighter. Something this big, this isn't really straight either if you look at it. This is a little bit crooked. As I twirl it around, you can see it's a little crooked. But it doesn't make, it's not perfectly straight. Glass beads in Europe, and they trade the Indians for them. You can see they're real rough. They're not very good. They're kind of rough glass. They didn't know how to make glass that good in those days. Yes? There was later on, yeah. After America was discovered, they went out west, and that's when the cowboys came along to herd the cows. Yeah, then you just blow it out. Just goes in there like this. Then you blow it out. School? Well, originally, from reservation schools, most of them were run by churches. Missionaries came out. And sometimes they had government teachers that were sent to reservations to teach. And then later on, they went to public schools like you do now.
What kind of games do you play?
Games they play now are the same kind of games you play. on the reservation, they play baseball, they play football. They have little league teams, and they compete with the teams in town. And a lot of people join the little leagues. You know, young people join little leagues and the Gray Y football and things. Just same thing you do, that y'all do here. Yes.
Did you have a name for your school?
No, it was just a reservation school. There was no name for it.
Was there any buffaloes here in Florida?
There used to be buffaloes in Florida. Yeah, they used to roam into the down into the. There was a few roamed over into the east coast of the United States. Most of the big herds were out west, but they did. There were a few that. That were in the all over the United States.
Did you hunt them?
No, they were they disappeared long ago, long before my time.
When they made that thing, mm-hmm. Do all those plants have holes in them?
No, this is solid in here, like bamboo. You ever seen bamboo? It's solid all the way across, and they break it out. They take a stick and they go through and break those. This was solid across these joints. No, one of our the great people, the only people that we have that they really talk about, Dave, was some of the great chiefs like Osceola. Now Osceola was, I'm sure you teachers can tell you about his place in history. He was a young man that when the war started, the Civil Indian Wars in the 1800s, that was a very young man, and he was a genius when it came to military tactics. And the Seminole War was the costliest war in the history of the United States up until about World War I, World War II. It cost the government of the United States in the 1800s $40 million. And you've seen the movies, the cowboy Indian movies, always fighting out west, Indians out west. But the Seminole Indian War cost more money than all the other Indian wars put together. It cost more lives and more money and more time. And the Seminoles were never defeated. They were the only tribe that was never beaten by the United States government, the United States Army. They never signed a peace treaty. They signed a cessation of hostilities, which means they're no longer hostile to the government, but they never signed a peace treaty. And they, Osceola was a young man in his late 20s, early 30s when he came forward and led the tribe against the army of the United States. And he had some very famous battles, one up in the Withlacoochee River where he took on Major Dade. They call it the Dade Massacre, where there was like about 120 Indians took on a lot of soldiers and beat him. So he was a very famous and a very knowledgeable man for his day. Question?
What's the white stuff on the
end of those guns?
Pardon? What's the white stuff on the
end of those guns? These? It's a willow. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of a willow that grows up in North Florida and Georgia and Alabama. I don't know what they call it. Yes? No, I was in the Air Force, and I was in the Bay of Pigs invasion, but that was long before your time. I'm sure you don't remember things like that. Yes?
Do you know any Indians in Arizona?
Yes, I do. Freddie Spencer's a good friend of mine, lives out there and makes a lot of jewelry for me. It might, if in the right way, it might break a window. I wouldn't want to try. Your teachers get mad at me. Might throw me out the window. Yes. I know a few Navajos. Yeah, they're they live in the what you call pueblos, and sometimes you see in the old cowboy movies stuff, it's a big square looking houses. They have ladders going up the outside. They're made out of adobe, which is a sand brick they make from the desert sands, and they have it's like a regular house, you know, concrete block house, and that's what they live in. The Navajos, the Zunis, all live out in that area. Yes?
When I was watching Pee Wee's Big Adventure, when he went to Texas for that place, they said something about adobe, and they showed how they made their, like, corn burrito, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to grow corn as a Native American plant. It was called maize. And the white man didn't know about corn until he came to the United States, until Columbus discovered America, and that's when he found corn. That was one of the main diets of the Indian, was corn. And he grew that, and they used to grind it up, make flour out of it, and make all kinds of pastries and breads out of the cornmeal.
Well, corn's a pretty much a Seminole state, too.
Yes, it is. Yeah, they have a drink we call sofki, which is, the Seminoles originally didn't have meal times. what the mother would do is get up early in the morning and put a big pot of sofki and some different things on the fire in a big kettle, and they cook all day long. Anytime you're hungry, you go eat. Now they have meal times like everybody else does, but originally we just ate when we were hungry. And a sofki is it's between a drink and a soup type thing. You can use it for soup or use it for a drink, like tea or something if you want to. And it's made from corn and some other things they put into it. And it's a kind of a thick drink. It's really good. It's like a corn soup. Yes? Most of the dances were for telling stories or telling legends or telling their history, dancing it out, to act out their history. Some of them were done for religious ceremonies, either to hope they bring rain or to cure somebody of a sickness or to drive away evil spirits or make the crops better. So there was a lot of different reasons for the dancing. Yes? No, they have the holidays now that everybody else has. There are no Indian holidays. Well, they have the Green Corn Dance, which is a festival the tribe has once a year. And that's their main Indian holiday, was a Green Corn Dance.
Could you tell us a little more about it, what it's about?
It's usually done in the fall. It varies. Each clan, each tribe, it'll go anywhere from May and June through maybe July, August, September. Different times they have it. But it's done... and hope the Green Corn Dance, you sit down with a medicine man and talk about your problems, and they kind of get rid of the old problems and solve disputes, and then they go through a religious ceremony and renew their dedication for next year, and they pray for good crops for next year and a good way of life for the following year. Yes?
How did they get their guns a long time ago?
They started trading them when the settlers came here. They traded the settlers for guns. They didn't have guns until the settlers came, until Columbus discovered America. They didn't know about guns. And then they would trade for different things they had that the settlers wanted. And the settlers would give them guns, and they would give them something to sit, like meat or corn or something that the settlers needed.
Did you or anybody else ever use a blowgun?
I've just played around, but I've never used one. I know people who do. They use them up in North Carolina and Cherokee. They still use them. But I don't use it. I like it just for show so you can see what they look like.
What do you tell the stories for?
Tell the stories because it's part of a heritage, and I think no matter what you are, you should find out about your past and learn about it and remember it and cherish it. And the stories are part of a past that told how people explained things that you did not understand, which I think are pretty. It's a pretty story. They're not necessarily believable, but it did explain at the time what they were trying to tell people why things happened and why they were there. And it's a heritage, I think, it should be remembered and cherished because they are pretty and it's part of a very important past to us.
Have you ever been a medicine man?
I've never been one. I've had several ceremonies with them. It takes a long time to be a medicine man. It takes many, many, many years. And you have to be chosen for that job. The medicine man picks somebody that he wants to train to be a medicine man, and it takes years of training, like a doctor. We finally become one.
Did you ever want to be a medicine?
No, I don't think I have the. It would be fun to be one, but I'm not really qualified to be one. I'm too old now to even try to be one. I never lived long enough to learn to trade.
What's your favorite holiday?
Pardon?
What's your favorite holiday?
My favorite holiday? Good question. I don't know. Probably Christmas, because it seems like Christmas time everybody's so happy. And people love each other so much at Christmas time. There's a brotherhood spirit that goes around, and everybody seems to be polite, and everybody seems to be loving and kind, and enjoy everything, and they seem to enjoy giving people presents. It's too bad that spirit doesn't last all year long.
What do you do as a living?
As a living? I work for a company it's a worldwide company that has health care. And I own my own business in underwater research. We do a lot of underwater diving and research work.
It's called Otter Enterprises.
Yeah. good, be a good one. Yes. What holidays? The same ones you do. We have all the same holidays.
Do you have any stories about Green Corn Dance that you could tell us?
No, not really. The Green Corn Dance is a very, it's a very solemn, sacred type thing. And there's really nothing around it. They just, some of the things we're not allowed to tell that go on. And, but it's just a time of dancing. They have what they call, it's called a black drink that the medicine man mixes up. And it does wonderful things to you when you drink it. It makes you sick to your stomach and everything else. And what you're trying to do is purge your system of everything from the past. And you throw up and you do all kinds of neat stuff. But what it does is cleans your system out so that you start the new year with a whole new, all the old things of the past are gone. And all your problems of the past are supposed to be left behind. And you face your new year with a new enthusiasm and a new body and a new start. Yes?
How do you make your instruments?
What instrument is that?
Like drums.
They take a tree and they hollow it out. And they take a piece of leather like that back there. Instead of curing it, they stop at a certain stage and make what they call rawhide, which is a very hard and very stiff leather. And they wet it. And they stretch it over the drum and tie it down. When it dries up, it shrinks and it gets very tight. And they beat on that. It makes a nice drum head. Yes?
Do you have to worry about anybody attacking your home?
Attacking what?
Anybody attacking your home?
No, I hope I don't. No more than y'all worry about that. It's a shame people have to be that way, isn't it? Yes? No, not right now. But sometimes we'll arrange for a dance and let your school know and you can come see one. Because they're very involved. It takes a lot of people and a lot of music and a lot of time to put one on. They're very involved. Yes? Indians give each other gifts the same as you. Only Indians, when Seminoles give gifts, we don't wrap them. The traditional way to give a Seminole gift is in a paper bag. They put them in a paper sack when they give their gifts. They don't wrap them in colored present, paper and stuff. But they give gifts. Usually they try to think of a useful gift that somebody can really use around the house or whatever. They're very thoughtful in their gifts.
What was one of the most favorite of yours? What was your most favorite story?
My favorite what? Story? Favorite story? It's hard to say because I like so many of them. They're all so pretty. I think the stars are probably one of my favorite, how the stars came to be. Because at night it's so pretty to look at the stars and all different things and try to find the different constellations, the ram and the fish and try to find all those things. And it's one you can really see. It's a story you can see every night. And when you look up the stars, you can see that story. So I think it's probably one of my favorite. Pardon? Any Braves? Well, all young men were called Braves, so yeah, I do know a lot of them, yeah. That's what a young man of your age and up would be called a Brave. Once he becomes a man of the tribe, he was a Brave. I can't hear you. Can you stand up a little bit? I've heard a lot of stories where the rain dances did work. There's an authenticated account where Walt Disney was making a movie. I don't know if it was Northwest Passage or some movie that Walt Disney was making. He made up in Alaska and in Canada. And he needed snow. And there was no snow. And they had a lot of money tied up in the crew. And this is from Walt Disney himself. And he had a lot of money tied up in the crew and a lot of money tied up in equipment and actors sitting there. And they couldn't film because there was no snow. And they waited for weeks and no snow. And they hired a medicine man from one of the Eskimo tribes to come over, and they figured a rain dance, all snow is rain in the wintertime. And they hired him to do a rain dance in the wintertime, and it started snowing. Now, I don't know if that was if it just would have done anyway or whatever you want to believe on that one, but Walt Disney didn't have to happen to Walt Disney.
Mr. Hancock, I think we're going to get ready to wind up. And
okay.
Maybe if you have a story to pass on to us,
what do you mean, like a story of just or my philosophy or?
No, well, a story that you know that maybe says a lot that we can share with others.
No, not really. What I'd like to pass on, like you remember if you could, is that you know, we're all human beings, we're in this earth together. And that the person sitting next to you, if you cut him, he bleeds. And if you kill him, they die. And they see what you see, and they breathe what you breathe, and they eat what you eat. And that we're all on the earth together, and that we should learn to love each other. And, you know, the person next to you has a story. You know, the Indians believe that you are always the center of your universe. That my wife's in West Palm Beach now, and if she goes outside and looks at the sky, she is dead center of her sky, exactly the center of it. I'm down here. If I go outside and look at the sky, I am dead center of my sky. I'm perfectly centered in my sky. And we believe that everybody is always the center of his universe, that he is right on the center of it. And we should always remember that and cherish that idea. And try to remember that each one of us has something to offer to the earth, and cherish each other's ideas and thoughts. Is there any, Jans, or anything else you wanted to cover? You have something? Sure, just a minute here. It's been a lot of fun talking to y'all. I hope you've enjoyed as much as I have and gotten as much as I have. It's been interesting. You've been a very good audience, very nice. You have a question? I have one in my backyard. What are y'all? What else you study in school? Anything in fun? Wahoo?
Yeah.
What's your name?
Eric.
E-R-I-C?
Okay.
Y'all, any more questions I can answer for you? Yes.
Did you ever make a weapon?
I've made... like a spear once. I got a spear at home I made on the wall I used for decorations. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
Okay, I think we'll break it up like that and take autographs and stuff. And thank you.
Well, thank you. What's your name?
Tyler.
Who?
Tyler.
How you spell that? T-Y-L-E?